experience. I met a lot of people, got a lot of ideas, brought a couple back here to share with two or three people who showed up. Safe Route School, quick history. It's a federal transportation legislation, Safe, Accountable, Flexible, Efficient Transportation Equity Act, a legacy provision passed in 2005. It includes funds for Safe Routes to School. It's a $612 million program. It didn't go away a couple months ago. It almost did. There still is a Safe Routes to School program. Purpose is to enable and encourage children, including those with disabilities, to walk and bike to school. Make bicycling and walking to school safer and more appealing, and facilitate the planning, development, and implementation of SAVE. Right now it's just for primary school. They don't have a high school level program yet, but they think by this year or next year, high schools will also be included. So is it a health issue? This was something interesting I learned there. Blue Cross Blue Shield of Minnesota sponsored the whole conference, and they had like 3-4 speakers up there because they have all these statistics. Boom! That's them. They've paid for everything. In California, Kaiser Permanente, they, boom, pay for everything. Those are the only special effects I have for this whole thing.
I
like the commentary.
So, this, of course, makes me think we got Northwestern Mutual right here in town, and they have a citizenship report they put out every year, and they may be interested in helping out with this as well. It's right up their alley, and their peers in the industry are doing this as well. So it's something to keep in mind. Childhood obesity. This is very surprising. You guys probably already heard this kind of stuff. In the 1970s, when I was walking to school, 4-6% of us were considered obese or overweight. And now, in 2008, 20% of kids are considered obese and overweight. And mainly, the reason they are is because they don't have incidental reasons to move around. Like my daughter, she's a skinny rail, but she's not able to walk to school or anything like that. Guess what Wisconsin's rate was in 2003? Well, it wasn't as terrible as you think. It was 13.5. But watch this jump. 31% in 2000. Well, I had another special effect. 31% in 2008. So that's a real problem. That's expensive. It's going to get expensive over the years because you know, I'll tell you guys that when you start out with an obesity problem, as you get older, you've got all kinds of problems that the insurance companies have to deal with. We are right here in this little red area that you don't want to be. That's us. And that's only from 1990 to 2006. So what they're saying is that a lot of this has to do with the fact that we don't have opportunities to walk anywhere. Here in Franklin, we have basically mandatory busing, so people, even if they wanted to walk, aren't going to walk. Here in Franklin, a little review of the Safe Route School program. It emerged from the Trails Committee, which was formed to address citizen requests to be able to walk and bike around town. Safe Routes to School grants were appealing because they're no-match grants. You get a grant, you don't have to match the grant. It's just money that you can use. But you have to have a plan in place. The plans aren't easy to put together, but fortunately they also have a planning grant, a grant for planning, which we were able to get. So the first grant award was a walking workshop where we got $2,500. We had a walking workshop back in April 2010. You can see people got outside, they all came back, and they worked together on ideas for connecting the school. We wrote up a bunch of suggestions, and then that went into our later report. The next grant award we got was a bigger one. That was the Planning Assistance Grant for $18,000, and that's what produced the document that you all hopefully have a copy of. And in that document, we used public information from a meeting we had on April 12th, which also provided input for the plan. So the process goes something like this, another special effect. I guess I have more special effects here than I thought. We did assessment that was funded via the walking workshop, put together a plan that was funded via the planning grant, and that was our public information meeting. We will also reassess the plan that's funded via the planning grant, and attending the conference. We'll have further meetings, and then we're applying for a mini-grant. The mini-grant Most people know by now the mini grant. There's a $1,000 grant. They don't give out a lot of them. But we're going to try to get flags. And the flags, and we're going to intersections and pick up the flag as a pedestrian, you walk through the sign, flag on the side. And the reason it's a good grant to get is because it not just helps the kids, but it also helps adults if they're out there walking. And it makes people aware in cars that there are people walking. You see that flag, it starts making you think about the fact that people walk. And then the next thing we do, the reason we made the big report and the reason we had the public engagement is you apply for the big major grant, and that's infrastructure. That can be education. It can be any number of things. And that's where you can get a 5 or 6 figure grant if you're lucky. The date for that grant, they haven't given the deadline date for that. They usually do that really close to the deadline. I don't know why they do that, but they try to scare you. So here are the sessions that I attended. Each one was at least 3 hours long. So this is like going to school for a week. I'm not going to spend 3 hours on each one of these things. But some of the stuff was way more interesting than I thought it would be, like GIS tools to help allocate infrastructure funds. We in Franklin have these GIS tools in place, layers that we can use to find out where people, where the school kids are coming from, what streets they have to cross, where the uncontrolled intersections are, and things like that. Roadway design, spent 3 hours talking about striping and widths and the green book and all things like that. The thing that emerged from all of this was every one of these sessions had something to do with something called complete streets. And what complete streets is, a lot of these people from different states have found that safe routes to school is a good kickoff for connectivity in your city. But then when you want to go further with it, you need a policy, a program, or even a law to put in books. And complete streets is actually a Wisconsin state law. There's a law in Wisconsin that says if you use state money to build a highway or a road, you have to include accommodations for pedestrians and bikes. Some local jurisdictions also have complete streets plans that they put on the books. So when someone comes in to build a housing, or if they want to build a commercial, they then have to observe complete streets. This is a spread from our planning grant application, and this is why complete streets seem to be very appealing. All the pictures that I took are numbered down here. Make it a little bigger so you can see. This is Pleasant View Elementary. This is Rawson. Here's 51st Street. And our grant area is basically this circle. So wherever there was a dot, that's where I took a picture. And, there's a better view of it. When you look at this, you see you got a bunch of kids here who want to go to school, but they got to cross Rawson. You got some kids over here who want to walk to school, but they got to get across here. It makes it easy to figure out where the problems are. So I got a couple of the pictures on here. This is going to be no secret to anybody who lives in Franklin. This is if you wanted to cross Rawson and go to Pleasant View, this is what you would see. And I think we got the grant just because of that picture right there. This is the median with all the trucks going by, shaking the ground. That's looking out to Rawson. Here's typical subdivision, high-speed turn out of a subdivision onto Drexel. High-speed turn within a subdivision. It's a street, but it's kind of acting like a road. Here's the one road into Pleasant View Elementary. I put this on my blog, and I've had it picked up and used nationally about 6 times, these pictures of the Pleasant View Road. They're appalled by this. And this is the little space you get if you're a kid walking to school. You got to fit in that little rut. I didn't pose that picture. That woman was actually out there pushing her baby on that little bitty shoulderless rope. Here's what they call a goat path. The kids wanted to get to the subdivision next door, so this is the path they made. You can see the school from it, and that's how they've been getting through. And then again, this is Rawson Avenue, what you have to cross truck traffic in order to get to school. Not easy. I put this in here just because I thought it would be a good time to pause. This is Andy's. And at Andy's, this is their little smoking corral. And this is where they put their propane tanks.
Somebody might want to call them up.
So, complete streets. Complete streets are designed and operated to enable safe access for all users. That's the book definition of it. Pedestrians, bicyclists, motorists, and transit riders of all ages and abilities are able to safely move along and across a complete street. That's right out of the book. And that there's an example of, you know, this could be Rawson. Rawson could look like that. It's the width is there. They put a little island out there, and most people are able to cross.
John, just a quick question. It's my understanding, I heard this anecdotally, that when they have trees in the medium and along the street, the fact that the trees encroach onto the airspace above the street, even though they don't impact the cars at all, they give the perception to drivers that the street's narrower than it really is, so they drive slow. Do they talk about that at all?
Oh, God, yeah, they spent a long time on that. It used to be, Jack, what did they call trees in the old street book? They used to call them non-vehicular obstacles or something.
Well, they're in the clear zone.
So they gave them some awful name.
Obstructions,
yeah, non-vehicular obstructions. But now what they found is, and later on we're going to talk about road widths and everything, that if you put trees on medians or along the side of the road and you scale them correctly, you're absolutely right. People get a feeling of slight encroachment and it does slow them down. And width makes people go fast. Feel safe, you go faster. The Wisconsin state law says that the department shall ensure that, by department, they mean the Department of Transportation, shall ensure that bikeways and pedestrian ways are established in all new highway construction and reconstruction projects funded in whole or in part from state funds or federal funds. So if you're building, if the state's helping you build a road, you gotta put a bikeway in.
And just to point that out, at the last council meeting, since we're only putting sidewalks on one side of 76th Street, the council literally had to adopt a resolution indicating that they were accepting that because the federal government requires it.
The state government?
Well, actually, the federal government. Federal government and the state government. The federal government's the one that's giving the money, so in this case, it's the feds.
So, and here is the Federal Highway Administration. Way back in 2000, they said that bicycling and walking facilities will be incorporated. And it didn't say should be. It said will be incorporated into all transportation projects unless exceptional circumstances exist. And yet, most states ignored this because they could. And if you can save a dollar, why not save a dollar? Elements of complete streets. There's dozens of them. I want you all to be able to go home tonight. So I'll get the two big ones. One is context-sensitive solutions, which is very important. There are conversations I've heard in this room where you'll have an alderman on this side talking about a street, and then an alderman on this side will say, well, why don't we do it to this street too? And they're not viewing things in context. One street is not like another. Rawson is not Putes. 51st is not 48. Things are different by context. Road diets. Some of you may have heard of this, some of you may have not. It's been going on for long enough now that they've done studies where they found what kind of results you get from road diets. We tend to talk about roads as every road you build is like, you put it in diapers, it's a little bitty baby road. And then when it gets into adolescence, you widen it more. And then when it's an adult road, it's rusted. But road diets now, because of the new trends in the plateauing of driving and everything, it turns out that narrowing roads will actually help your traffic situation, slow down your traffic, add to safety, and save you money in the short and long run. And I'll talk a little bit about that as we go along. Context-sensitive solutions. Just the quick down and dirty of it is, a road is different depending on where the road is. So right here, that's suburban residential neighborhood. They got a lot more plantings in there. You wouldn't do that over here in the urban core. You'd have fewer plantings. But it's the same road. This is maybe 25, 30 miles an hour. Maybe you go to 25, 30 here, but you go faster as you get out into the more rural areas. But it doesn't have to be 45 all the way through. And the way they do this is by narrowing, by putting some of these curbs actually butt out. They bulb out, which slows people down, gives pedestrians a chance to get across. context-sensitive, are project-oriented and location-specific. So you don't just say, we're going to put this kind of street right here because that's the kind of street you do, and you say, nope, because we're right here, we're going to do this kind of street. Here's the whole book full of these things. I just put one example up. We see a lot of these kind of curves in suburbs, not just here. What they're tending towards now is the ones that come out farther so that pedestrians can get across quicker. This was actually in a chapter where we talked about how large trucks can still make that turn if they need to, because that's one of the arguments that are made. Well, the big trucks can't get through, but they're saying that's fine. It also slows traffic down because they have a narrower avenue to get through. This could be 27th Street right here. A little bulb here. We're talking Aerotropolis, where people are taking some sort of transit from the airport and spend some money at 27th Street. Maybe they're on one of these things. Maybe they're on some kind of super cool electric thing. But people can actually get back and forth. The roads, the cars are visiting. They don't live there. They're visiting. The people live there. So this is built for people to live there. Road diets. Road diets are fascinating. This is a road before the road diet. Here's a road after the road diet. Fewer travel lanes. You have a little relief island for pedestrians. There's striping and painting. There's a lane here for the bikes. They already had a sidewalk. And the plantings. Plantings slow people down as well. Benefits of complete streets are obviously safety. When you look at the charts, when they show how many people get killed when you're hit when you're going 30, and how many people get killed when you're hit when you go 40, you wonder why there are 40-mile-an-hour roads near residential at all. Because you're going to get killed when you get hit at 40 miles an hour. You got a chance if you get hit at 30. You're probably going to survive if you get hit at 25. Options for people who don't have cars, there's going to be more and more people like that out there, whether it's because of the financial condition that they're in, or the age they are, or the fact that more differently abled people are able to get out there and be independent, but they can only be independent if they have a way to get to and from work or to and from school without having to drive. Health, we went over health, got to get people out walking. But this is the main thing. This is the one that we're going to talk about the most. Community and economic development, because if you can't find a way to derive value from every square inch of your city in this current economy, you're going to have a big problem. So that's why I made that little cool effect there, so you remember. So community and economic development. The popularity of complete streets, there's a National Complete Streets Coalition. AARP, they like complete streets because people who are a little older and aren't driving it, they want to get around. American Planning Association, they've endorsed it. National Support and a Resource Network. There's a place you can go online and you can get sample ordinances, sample laws, sample policy. They'll come and they'll give presentations for you. There's webinars. This is an established brand. This is something that people are doing, so it's not like you have to pick up the pieces yourself. Locally, the Metropolitan Building Association, Scott Matthew, they endorse complete streets. In fact, he mentioned it in a presentation he did here. Endorsed by the American Society of Civil Engineers, they put a press release out about 4 months ago. They're 100% behind this. So Wisconsin state law, that doesn't hurt. And there are over 200 state and local complete streets policies in force right now. The first Wisconsin one went into effect last month, and it was in... where Steve Taylor, across. Here are, on this map, you can see state policies, local policies, state and local policies. There's a lot of complete streets going on out there. A lot of people have adopted these measures. It's not because it's touchy-feely and people want to be able to walk and people want to be able to meet one another and all that stuff. It's because this is a financially sound way of approaching infrastructure. Michigan cannot mess around. They're in deep trouble. That's where Detroit is. This map shows all the communities that have complete streets, more context sensitive, or road diets in effect. They obviously see that this is something that's going to help their bottom line. So the old suburban economy was, you take the money that you make from your tell me if I got this right. If the money you make, you derive from your new development, and for the expenses that come up from the old development, right, suburban development, there's a name for that. I'm not going to say it, but that's kind of what you're getting into. Someone's paying for someone forward, and that's why a lot of suburbs are in difficulty right now. I got that from a guy who he spoke at the CNU convention, and he spoke at the Safe Houses School convention. And a lot of these concepts come from him. You have to address, because the federal government and state government are not funding a lot of infrastructure anymore, you got to find ways to squeeze the most you can out of what you have. So you have to demand efficiency and value creation in already built areas rather than unchecked expansion. So people who started their Safe Routes to School program have found that by using some of this infrastructure money and putting in pedestrian amenities, biking amenities, it's helped their bottom line as far as businesses coming in, businesses finding new possibilities, and home values going up. This right here is housing starts. That's not the way we want to see it. This right here is home values. That's not the way we want to see it. But this right here, this is the creepy thing. This is money contributed to local infrastructure. And you see, this is all red, and it's going to be red for a long, long, long time. So you got to find a way to use what you have. And if you're going to change it so that people can walk more or people can bike more, it's going to have to be in an inexpensive way. So what are streets in this economy? In the new economy, what are streets? Problem that a lot of American cities have had is they have roads and streets treated interchangeably. A road is all about speed. A road is lack of intersections. A road is curves, not corners. And it's generally away from residential. So that's your 45 and your 55s. Those are your straightaways. A street, on the other hand, is there not only to move cars. It's there to accommodate parked cars as well. It's there to accommodate walking and biking people, and it's there to accommodate people, for instance, in wheelchairs. That's why we build streets. But for our purposes, we're going to say that a street is a network within a place that allows you to get around and serves as a framework for capturing value. So here are the important words. It's a network for a place you get around, and it captures value. The word car doesn't appear in there. A car can use a street, but it's all about a network, it's all about a place, and it's all about capturing value. Capturing value means tax base from businesses, houses, office buildings, hotels, restaurants, etc. Capturing value is not from moving and storing cars. Moving and storing cars won't make you a dime. Getting people to businesses, getting people's houses, their values to go up, that's what's going to make money for a jurisdiction. So for our purposes, we're going to say that a street, its function is to connect useful destinations to better capture value. That means a literal street or road is a street. But a trail, for our purposes, complete streets, is also a street with quotation marks around it. A sidewalk is a street. It gets you around. It's part of the network. And a path is a street. So streets, roads, paths, sidewalks, trails. We had all these names, so we used to put the word recreational in front of trails. We've got to stop doing that, because all these things, what they really are, is their infrastructure. They get us around, they help the tax base to grow, they help us derive more value. So we in the U.S. have begun to reconfigure our streets so they have the characteristics of roads. That's what we fight in Safe Routes to School all the time. Roads are everywhere. Streets are scarce. We got Drexel we got to deal with. We got Rossing we got to deal with. And because of that, this is our de facto commercial area, but there aren't any streets. There's two roads that intersect each other. And it's not particularly friendly for somebody to walk across this. I know I took the picture during the winter, and it probably has looked better. But our streets are not good for people to walk on. We've got trucks coming down these streets. This poor guy here, he came to one of our meetings. He walks his dog every day. This is a high-speed turn that most residential neighborhoods have. All over the country, they're like this. So roads versus street, the result of this is we're no longer to capture maximum value anymore. Development flees the area, and you end up with financially unproductive space. So perceived barriers to putting complete streets in effect. People will say that these, if you put slower speeds, for instance, let's say Drexel will slow that thing down to 25, they'll say, well, you're going to decrease your mobility and it's going to increase costs for the vehicles. Federal highway standards and guidelines. Level of service C. Anybody not know what level of service C is? Level of service C. You hear this sometimes. People say we have to build this road so that 20 years from now it will handle peak load. 20 years from the day it opens. That's level of service C. Did I say that right? Level of service C is 20 years from opening?
It's actually
up to 30. Is that
30
now?
Yeah.
So everybody, people will tell you, well, the reason we built this road so wide or the reason we're widening this road is because we have to achieve level of service C. That's the rule. And another perception of complete streets is that it's going to be expensive. You're going to have to spend some money. Turns out they're all myths. None of these are true. And I went to this full convention to tell you why they're myths. Cost and time. If a roadway is being reconstructed, rebuilding the roadway with a 10-foot lanes, so that's a narrower road, 10-foot lanes, and timing the traffic signals for 30 miles per hour will control speeds and can actually result in a reduction in costs by using a narrower overall roadway structure. This guy knows what he's talking about. He's a city traffic engineer for the city of Chicago. Met him at the convention, had lunch with him, nice guy. He also said that you're going to get complaints from people if you slow down traffic so that kids can walk to school. Let's say you slow down Boston traffic at 30 miles an hour. People say, well, it's going to take me longer now to get from A to B. Well, there's not a lot of lights on Boston Avenue, but he says that if you time the lights, which a lot of places don't time them for certain speeds, if you time those lights, and if it were a narrower road so you don't have the maximum speed car establishing the pace, people will actually get from A to B as quick or a little quicker. Level of service C. The Green Book. Engineers know about the Green Book, right? First edition came out in 84. The current edition we're looking at is in 04. Did you get your 2011 Green Book yet? So that thing's brand new, and there are some interesting changes in it. The old Green Book says that design speed, now design speed isn't the speed limit. Design speed is how fast you feel you safely can drive when you're out on Ross and you're out on Drexel. So Drexel's design speed, Jack, what's Drexel's design speed?
Probably 40.
About 40? People are going 50, 55 on Drexel regularly. I live there, I watch them, because they feel safe doing it. It's flat and beautiful.
It's got big shoulders.
It's got big shoulders. So it says every effort should be made to use as high a design speed as practical to attain a desired degree of safety, mobility, and efficiency. Well, they changed that now. They took out as high a design speed as practical. So now design speed can actually be much, much, much lower, where you can actually impede speed with the design of your road. So what level of service is it characterizes the operating conditions on the facility in terms of traffic performance measured related to speed and travel time, freedom to maneuver, traffic interruptions, and comfort and convenience. That also will be changed in the new book because that's talking about coddling the car but not taking care of the people who are outside the car. Level of service goes like this, A, B, C, D, E, F. C is level of service we keep hearing about. We want stable flow at maximum capacity on whatever road we build, which means the most cars that will ever be on that road will be in a 15-minute period of time between Monday and Friday, probably not on Saturday and Sunday, and we're designing it so it can handle that load of cars without any stoppage, just straight through. That's over-design. So right now, people refer to the 2004 book, and when they do an arterial, they're thinking level of service C. Now it's different. The 2011 Green Book says you can go C or D, which means you can actually slow down the traffic and build the roads.
The state around here has been going D.
They've been going D now?
Well, for a number of years. All of them.
I'm glad we live in a progressive state. Lane widths. In 2004, lane widths talked about 10 to 12 feet. They're mainly worried about the truck traffic. You're only going to narrow it if there's no truck traffic, little or no truck traffic in that area. But 12-foot lane widths are most desirable. A study comes out that says that there is no relationship between narrower lanes and a lack of safety or a drop in safety. So it turns out when you narrow lanes, which slows down the traffic, makes it easy for pedestrians to cross, it doesn't cause any more danger. So in 2011, they changed it so that they took out highly restricted, they took out and should be used, and took out higher speed, so that they actually, I don't know if they encourage narrower lanes, but they're not going to penalize people for using narrower lanes.
27th Street, they're looking at level foot lanes now, and that's a major arterial. So they are trying to
slow. And slow people down, that's good, though. It's supposed to be commercial. You want people zipping through. Another perceived barrier is the cost of complete streets. And this, you know, they took 3 hours to go over costs in one of these sessions, but this is what I took out of it. If you incorporate complete streets elements into new street designs, so if you go into it with a policy and your resurfacing plan, so during the regular order of resurfacing, you can have low-cost implementation. So it's not like you're adding anything. You're just doing something different during your resurfacing. If you implement complete streets incrementally, instead of a full-scale change, do this over a course of a few years, it's not going to cost a lot of money. And it turns out there are actual cost savings in this whole idea of road guidance. You can actually save money.
Here's giving you an example of that. How much was saved on college with four lanes versus if it stayed two? Because they were saving money and all the houses that have right-of-way that they have to purchase and all the home value that got to be made.
Do you have a real number for that? And that's not to mention the maintenance, how many times the plow goes up and down.
Yeah, but this is what they're doing. You can't compare that because this is resurfacing what they're doing now, and the other was really old construction. So that's not a comparison.
So here is an example of here's what a road diet looks like. Old road, you take out some travel lanes. So you have a turn lane down the middle in this case. You've got two lanes where cars actually travel, and then you've got these bike lanes here. And you can go one step further, and you can actually put a pedestrian relief island there so people can safely cross. And then you see these lines here are actually recessed from where the stop sign is so that their field of vision is better, and the bike can actually go up in front and see where here.
What's the middle lane?
This middle lane? That's turn.
It's still a twiddle, but they've got an island for pedestrians.
It's what?
Twiddle?
Yeah.
Actually, no, because they've got solid yellows down the center, don't they? They basically said no turning there.
Yeah, you can't turn here.
You can't turn anywhere on that street.
Wisconsin won't allow the common use of a center line. Like others, you know, you see a lot of states where common lanes are turn lanes where cars can come into each other. In Wisconsin, that's not legal.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the states.
I got it.
But not Wisconsin won't allow those. That's what old Highway 100 was when it went through Franklin originally. It was a three-laner, and the center lane was a turn lane, and they just had arrows. But the problem is you can get two people getting in the middle lane and coming together. It is efficient, though. And a lot of states use it, but Wisconsin won't allow that.
Well, okay, then let's pursue that, though. Because before you had a lineup that said Wisconsin had adopted
complete streets.
So is what we're showing here, is this just a guidebook handbook? Or
these are not guidebooks and handbooks. States won't.
So when they've adopted complete streets, that doesn't change what you're just talking about, is not having the center lane then? Is that correct?
That doesn't change it. You would adopt complete streets within the context of your traffic laws. So this is an example of a residential area where they got that really fast four lanes. And again, the reason you get fast traffic is because there's enough room for the fastest car to go as fast as he wants free, and everybody else has to get out of the way. This is their conceptual drawing of the change they did. They put an island for pedestrians, so they have a place they can stop. There's only one travel lane per car. And then they actually, when they actually did it, it looks pretty close to the way they conceived it.
And that could be done without even the middle lane. You could put an island and then not have the four lane.
And I think I got a couple in here that don't have that.
So, I mean, that would work.
Yeah, well, I could have
asked for one.
And another thing that they do is, and it's a subtle thing, driveways actually have the driveways are treated differently so that for some reason there's some psychological thing that makes it safer if you actually pave across the driveway. Have you heard about that? People don't pave across driveways, but now they do it in the driveways and actually come out to the road. That was a brand new one to me. I hadn't heard that one before. Here's one side by side. I think this has got that center turn lane. So four lanes turns into two travel lanes with one turn lane. But look what they did with all that extra bit. Now it's the bike.
So in Minnesota, they've instituted these road diets. They've been doing this for quite a few years. And they did it during the regular course of their resurfacing. They didn't do anything out of the ordinary. They ended up using less asphalt, so obviously they saved some money there. There's less surface area for plowing. So over the course of a couple years, they're looking at cost savings. But then what got really interesting was when they did the study, crash reductions went down 37.3% all the way down to 54.3% in some areas. So the range is 37 to 54. That's pretty significant. And is it because they slowed down? Is it because the pedestrians had more time to get across? I don't know. Overall, 44.2% fewer crashes. That's worth looking into. So the old paradigm used to be roads must grow and widen to accommodate more and more drivers, because as we travel through time, in the 2000s now, more and more people are driving. But it turns out, there are more and more people are driving. This is 1986, and all it does is go sky high. Another special effect. Look what's happening. We've actually plateaued in 2007 and went down in 2009. So there's not every reason to think that it's just going to continue going. Maybe it continues flat.
When gas is $12 a gallon, it'll probably go down some more.
Well, I anticipated that. New York Times did this. This is a pretty cool little chart. Height shows you the price of gas. And this is, they've adjusted for inflation. It wasn't really this expensive back then, but that's how much it was in today's dollars. And if you look at travel miles driven, when it starts heading backwards, that means fewer travel miles have been driven. But you see, they guessed wrong here. It actually went down here. This is a couple years old. It swung backward, came down, and stayed down, even when the price of gas went down, the travel miles. So there are reasons to think, when you look at the red line is now, miles driven now by these age groups. This is the younger age group. The blue lines are travel miles that were driven in 2001. This is just a 7-year difference. Younger people are driving less. Is it because of gas being expensive, or is it because they just don't want to drive so much?
Spending more time on their iPods, they don't have time to drive.
Yeah. There's more fun to be had at home than you can go off.
Car insurance is too expensive for them. Tell you, especially after an accident.
So is there a return on investment for walkability? This woman runs, there's this big organization called CEOs for Cities. There's all these corporate people, and they're trying to find ways to improve cities. They're nonpartisan. And she says that redeveloping for walkability will not only enhance the local tax base, but will also contribute to individual wealth by increasing the value of what is, for most people, their biggest asset. That's their home. Home values go up in places that are walkable. Realtors use a thing called the Walk Score. You go on the internet, you can do this with your own address. You go to www.walkscore.com, put in your address, and it'll give you a score, I think, from 1 to 90 what your walk score is. 90 is really good. That means you can get anywhere you want to go. If you live in New York, you get a 90. If you live where I live, you get like a 13. 1 point increase in walk score is associated with an increase of value ranging from $700 to $3,000, depending on your market. That's significant. You'd like to be able to sell your house and put that little score on there and have it be a little bit higher if it actually has a monetary value attached to it. So complete streets have wide acceptance. They're consistent with engineering standards and requirements. They increase the value of homes and businesses. And overall, when they take all these statistics all together from Minnesota and these other states, they found that there's a 29% reduction in total crashes per mile in areas with road diets. So they slowed the traffic with narrower roads and they put a pedestrian amenities in. And it's also inexpensive to implement and can actually save money, especially the road diet. And it's promotable as a, if we were to implement something like this, as a forward Franklin initiative. Take all these factors and say, here's something we're doing in order to help the tax base commercially, residentially, all over the city. So, if I had time, I would have done this super cool animation to show how all these different constituencies that we have right now. We have an economic development process, we have trails committee that just got done meeting, we have engineering, we have parks commission, we have planning, and they're all trying to serve all these constituencies here. We got a school district to worry about. We've got the elderly. We want them to be able to get around. We want the disabled to have some kind of independence. Homeowners want their values to go up. Children want to be able to walk to school. Homeowners associations don't want a path coming through their neighborhood without you telling them ahead of time. You've got business that wants more people lingering around their business. You've got the police and fire department who wants to make sure that the fire truck can make a circle in that cul-de-sac. You've got all those things working in their little silos, which I've observed over the last couple of years in doing this. I've been in this room watching them talk about a path behind the high school that was going to connect the neighborhood to the high school. And some local homeowner was nice enough to, it was one of those things where no good neighbor goes unpunished. It ended up being kind of a problem. And it's because the trails committee never heard. We never heard that somebody was planning to put a trail behind them. So how could you advise or advise against them? We've heard the Parks Commission, some of the problems that you've had in proposing a perfectly good trail, but then the neighborhood, let's say they aren't properly prepared for some reason. They feel like it's being thrown down their neck. We're all looking at a little bit of money, city budget, some grants, impact fees, DOT transportation fund, developers, when they come in now and then they'll put a road in. Now, if I had time, I would have done some cool animation where all these guys are going after this stuff and not talking to all these guys. And all these people are just kind of complacent, standing over there. The point I'm trying to make with all this is, complete streets as a concept, what it does is it takes all these elements on the left, all these constituencies on the left, and all these constituencies on the right, and they all dive into this area in the middle together instead of one at a time. So if, for instance, we were to try to figure out how do we get people from elderly housing on 51st Street, how do we get them over to Center so they can go shopping by themselves? It's not just a road issue. It's not just a sidewalk issue. It's trails, sidewalks, and roads all put together. It's a combination of things. So there are different grants, different impact fees, different things maybe even in the city budget, which I doubt, but let's say there was something in the city budget, that could be combined if all those people on the left were having that conversation. And we're also engaged with all these people on the right. So the Homeowners Association was there at the beginning of the process. And the people who live in the homes for the elderly are there at the beginning of the process. And they know that this is part of a citywide effort to raise property values, make some more money for people so they don't have to pay such high property taxes. So the proposal is this: Franklin Complete Streets Policy and Ordinance. We had a Trails Committee. Trails Committee, I think, did quite a good job. Got some grants, got some awareness, got some people engaged with the city, but it's a narrow, narrow little area that the Trails Committee deals with. Franklin Complete Streets Policy and Ordinance would incorporate engineering, it would incorporate
Parks Commission, it would incorporate the plan office, it would incorporate all these elements together to create a policy and even an ordinance, perhaps, that would take into account any road, path, sidewalk, site plan, business coming in, upgrade your house, would be looked at through the lens of the Complete Streets policy and ordinance. And Complete Streets is something that has been shown to work. It's not expensive. It's not a thing we have to throw a bunch of money at it. It's something you can promote. You can say, Lacrosse, for instance, has been promoting the fact that they have the first Complete Streets ordinance in the state of Wisconsin. Some grants that you apply for. We have a Complete Streets ordinance. Well, you've got 1 foot in that you didn't have before. When the county comes in or the state comes in and says, this is the way 76th Street is going to look, you say, wait a minute, we've got a Complete Streets ordinance that says it's got to look this way. And if you have an ordinance in place, then they're going to talk about the bike lanes. They're going to talk about maybe narrowing parts of the slowdown. Complete Streets policy, and I constructed these out of policy stuff from across the country. I didn't make this stuff up. The recommended steps to a Complete Streets policy, what we would do is create a new entity incorporating planning, engineering, trails committee. The trails committee wouldn't exist anymore. It would be absorbed into this. Parks Commission, economic development, whoever else has input into this would be involved in creating this policy and monitoring this policy. We would regularly engage with community groups, the elderly, differently abled neighborhood associations. These people are no longer caught by surprise or baffled by why this is occurring and this isn't occurring, or why did you build this but you didn't do this. Instead, we have walking workshops and things like that on a regular basis. These are things that happen once or twice a month. They're talking about these things because we have a common goal, and that is to make the city a place that people can get around in. Using that, we construct and promote a vision for how and why we want to complete our streets. I can tell you one reason I want to complete our streets. They have Special Olympics bowling at the bowling alley, Root River Lanes, and there's a guy, one of the guys who bowls, and these guys are really good bowlers. He is differently abled, and I don't know what his specific issue is, but he's a fairly independent young guy. He's got tattoos and stuff, and he rides a bike, and he wants to take his bike over to Root River Lane so he can participate in Special Olympics. And I was at the intersection that we just showed up there, 76th and Rawson, and I saw him cross on his bike, and I thought to myself, this is a pretty dangerous spot for him, and it shouldn't be dangerous. It should be a spot, he should be able to go to his bowling match, and he should be able to go to work. He can't drive, but he can use a bike, and he can walk. So we specify that all users, when we say all users, we're talking about pedestrians, bikes, all ages and abilities, as well as vehicles. The city of Franklin is promoted as a place that's built and maintained for people of all abilities. We apply this policy to both new and retrofit projects, including design, planning, and maintenance from the ground up. If we were going to redo, if the strip mall is redone and they come into the plan, we say, well, we've got this Complete Streets thing. Here are some things you can do to aid the ability to get in and out of your business, or to aid the ability for cars to park without having to be out in front. Make any exceptions specific and set a clear developer-friendly procedure. One thing that they talked about at Safe Routes to School, they had a whole session about addressing this whole idea of being developer-unfriendly. And some people think, well, if you have a rule, if you have a regulation, it's bad for developers. But the opposite is true. If you have very clear rules and very clear regulations and ways for the developer to know when he or she walks in what they're going to be dealing with, and to know what he or she can do to exceed that and to promote the fact that you're doing it, you're going to get much better results. Create a comprehensive, integrated, connected network for all modes that maximizes value. And that means you don't have dead spots in Franklin that you can't get to unless you're in a car. You're trying to find a way that people can get anywhere they want to get. Policy would be adaptable by all city entities to cover all roads, trails, paths, sidewalks, site plans. So when somebody comes in with a site plan, there's something in the Complete Streets policy that will address what it is they want to do. Direct the use of the latest and best design criteria and guidelines while recognizing the need for flexibility. And that's a big deal. There's nothing written in stone to where this is not going to happen, because the 27th Street standards say we can't have a Starbucks across the street from Northwestern Mutual. That happened. We don't want that to happen. We want Starbucks to be able to go across the street from Northwestern Mutual and bring in other businesses, because we're flexible enough so our guidelines can and move for them a little bit. Establish a performance standard with measurable outcomes. You want this in anything. You want to be able to show that it's safer, accidents have gone down, speeding incidents have gone down, average speed on this street or that street has gone down. So we will have something in place so that we can measure this. We're not just guessing. And then define specific next steps to implement as a result of the policy. And the logical next step is to go from policy to ordinance if we can't put an ordinance in place right away. So I guess what I want to leave people with is, if you want to go fast, and that's what we do here in Franklin, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go fast, have a committee that goes after one specific thing and do it alone, and you'll quickly get a trail, or you'll quickly get a little piece of sidewalk, or you'll quickly get this road done over there. But if you want to go far, right, go together. We all go in together. Trails goes in with parks. Parks goes in with engineering. Engineering goes in with planning. And we all go in together for a sustainable community that we can pay for over time, rather than that old Ponzi thing that I was talking about. So the proposal is complete streets. And that's what I got out of the 3 or 4 days at Safe Routes to School, is the natural extension of Safe Routes to School is these complete streets policies. I wish it wasn't just us 11 here. I wish the mayor was here, because I got to do this all over again. If this is something that we can promote, this is something we can get in the paper, this is something that if we put out a brochure, and we want businesses to come in, we tell them we're a complete streets community. We address all of our transportation issues in a holistic manner. If you build a coffee shop here, people aren't going to always come by. People are going to go somewhat slow.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Something
in the student's letter request that we need to do is, would you be going to give this presentation to the community?
It's all put together.
Sir, like I said, I just wish, you know, we had a fuller house for on this one. So now when I say complete streets, you know what it is about. That's all.
Very good. Well, I just did some money that the state put forward. I would
Commissioner Ballard.
I believe this shows some of the value that when we are able to invest the money, one of our volunteer people, one of our elected officials goes to some of these conferences. I think some of the information they bring back can be of use to promote. We may not agree with this, but I think it will spark discussion. On this, we can learn ways to advance the community in directions we want. So I agree with John, and I think Jack will back me up on this. We're coming into a new era in the economy where we're no longer going to be able to rely on the state or even the county or even the federal government to help us with financing for some of the projects that we deem critical on the local level. And I think far too often we have our short-term blinders on. There's nothing in that. This is not a negative. But we see the short-term gain of certain ways of growth, how we've been developing the community. But we sometimes, if we scale it after that long-term scale where we had the federal government or the state or the county able to come in and help us with some of those costs, it works in our favor. But I just don't think that's going to happen anymore. We've got to start thinking of those long-term costs and the long-term benefits we're going to get from some of those. Obviously, I think this helps us get that long-range vision and the overall cost of the community and the overall benefits of it.
You mentioned policy and ordinance. Are there existing models for policy and ordinance, or is this something that would have to be starting from scratch here?
Well, one of the appealing things of this is not only are there existing ordinances and models all over, but there is this statewide coalition that will come here and
they'll look at your specific situation. They'll help you construct what it is you need. Because it's very flexible, like that center lane issue. You would look at that in a different manner. So you can, I have a stack of them like this high of how different communities have addressed it, some by ordinance, some by policy. And, of course, you have to make it fit within your present traffic laws. But everybody seems to be able to do it.
Are there funds for that? Are they, is that a charge to the city? Are there grants available for that? Or what would be the financing of it?
Just the other day, there's an organization called Smart Growth America, and they offered free training for a whole list of different disciplines, one of which being complete streets. You have to apply for it, tell them where you are and what your need is, and you can bring them into that. But there's also, like anything else, it's a thing you can buy, you can bring in a consultant. But there's countless webinars, there's countless free opportunities, because like I said, it's a Wisconsin state law, so they actually are part of this consortium, so they actually sponsor things. And there's a structure in place. You don't have to invent anything at all.
Any other questions?
I know I've tried to get 10-foot lanes for a system before. They changed the MUTCD.
What's the MUTCD for all of us? Our National Bureau of Transportation Standards or something?
Yeah, it's basically the national.
Okay.
And maybe I missed it, but I think one constituency you're going to have to look at really closely is police and fire, because a lot of times, especially, I'd make those people big, because you get down to 20-foot wide streets, they tend to get really leery about trying to get through, especially if they have an emergency. And feel somebody's going to be parked on the street, and snow plowing is a whole other issue too. And I guess the other question I had, when you talk about road diets, I guess I would have thought it'd be about narrowing the roads. But I think in most of the examples that I saw, it didn't look like the curbs were any closer. So it wasn't clear to me where the real savings were, because the amount of asphalt area was pretty much the same. So,
well, there are other examples. But in these examples, they resurfaced what they had. They didn't dig up anything. They just kept what they had rather than expanding. So you can call that a diet.
And that was the one that really sort of interested me, is because if you just talk about resurfacing, you're obviously not looking at the curves. And so they still talked about saving money. And to me, I'm not exactly sure how that would work.
Well, I think what he's saying is you're not going to make it bigger. You're going to keep the road the same width for the next 10 years rather than adding two more lanes for the next 10 years.
So in that case, you didn't gain 10 pounds.
Sure.
So it's like a bet.
But in areas where there is new development, would this same concept still be used? That is to say, perhaps a center lane, bike lanes on the outside, essentially you would still be taking up as much land for the similar type of development?
Well,
they have a different design.
They have a whole booklet that talks about new versus resurfacing, and how when you put a road in, you can have it preparatory. So that the road at that time, let's say it's not time for a sidewalk right now, but you want be able to do it inexpensively or add a bike lane inexpensively in the future. They have these set plans, the drainage and what your slope and everything like that should be. So that's part of the one of the sessions they had was how do you do things now so that in 5 years, and we'll use Pute's example. Pute's has been talked about as getting a sidewalk, but it's really not a sidewalk area. It's an area that should have a lane you can walk in, or you can use a bike in. But there's methods that you can use the next time you resurface so that it's ready, so that inexpensively it can be done, rather than having to commit to it.
Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah. I haven't seen the plans for 76th Street, but I wonder if anybody's knows how wide the lanes are there. I mean, we're talking about a sidewalk costing $850,000, but maybe if we did put it on a road diet, maybe the funds would be there to put in next.
To broaden that out a bit, though, it also affects Rawson Avenue as well, and changes potentially there. What's the county involvement in this? Because to accomplish some of the things that we're talking about on some of the city roads, We can't do that without the county being fully engaged. So, Mr. Bennett?
Yeah, we're working on that now. It's kind of going back for restudy.
What's being studied?
Lane widths and what the pavement markings are going to be.
Are we talking 76th?
Yes.
So several streets in
the
sure.
76th Street.
76th Street.
Talking about 11-foot lanes.
The point is, though, the county is considering these issues.
Yeah,
and there is prospect.
Yeah, we're having some real problems with the county because what they're having is right now is 2 12-foot lanes and only a 2-lane roadway, and then a bike lane, and then a 13-foot auxiliary lane. And we're concerned that they're going to sandwich the bikes in between what's going to be used as a 4-lane with the bike in the center. And that's the design that they came up with. So we met with them, and now they're going back and restudying it. Possibly what they're going to do is 2 11-foot lanes and then a bike lane on the outside, and that's what we're suggesting. But that's still up in the air. We haven't got
the
result.
But the point is the county is actually open to these ideas. They are considering it. They're engaging with the local community and so forth.
Well, they made all these changes. They didn't even talk to us.
Oh, I see. Okay.
So there is no communication.
Okay.
Absolutely none whatsoever. Now we finally initiated it. But the mayor had to go to the state secretary, and this thing's going up and down.
Mr. Bell.
But there isn't the communication. That's one big problem.
Commissioner Bell.
I think that's a good point. That how do we engage the county and the state? I think John's point about the state legislature has passed a complete streets. Not a mandate, but it's kind of guidelines.
That's a law.
It's a law, but what helps there is just like I think about this as I thought about when we implemented stormwater rules. Everybody thought that was going to be the end of civilization when we implemented stormwater rules. Something that everybody got for free was going to now have to have developers and communities, and who's going to pay attention, and everybody's going to say, the feds and the state are going to say, we're not going to do it. I think the same thing with complete streets can kind of follow the same kind. We pass an ordinance or we pass our policy on complete streets. It mimics some of the previous work that's been done by other communities. Now when the county or the state come in to build a road, we now have our complete street ordinance. I think right now we really don't have an ordinance or a policy that tells the state or tells the county that we want them to follow certain guidelines. It's tailored on a project-by-project basis. Now we'll have an ordinance that says we have some guidelines and goals and objectives that actually are tied to a state law that we would like you to take into consideration, or in some cases must take into consideration when you're going to build a county road or a state road through our community. I think that has more teeth because in many cases the DOT has the ability to trump certain other local community ordinances. But I think in this case, because of the state law passed in the state legislature, if we tie our ordinance correctly, we don't want to dictate to them on everything, but I think we want to be sure that it meets, if we have a goal and we have an objective in mind about the community, we have, I think, well within our rights as a local community to ask them to try to meet those goals and objectives. And any developer that comes in would do the same thing. And I've seen smaller versions of this. It's not at complete streets, but in Michigan where the communities are in around Ann Arbor told all the developers, you must, not only when you tie the streets together, you have to tie the trails together. And they laid out a whole trail system, and it was almost totally funded. Not all of it, but most of the trails were funded on the development as they tie in with the trail that came from the development previous to them, or small sections that where there was land not being developed at the city or the local municipality. So I think this has a lot of possibilities and potential if it's something in the direction that we want to take.
Any other comments on item 3A? Mr. Van.
Well, we do have a few things in our ordinances that relate to complete streets, and that is, in our ordinances, we say all arterial streets, we must have sidewalks on both sides of all arterial streets. That's what our code says. Our code says that on all collector streets, we must have sidewalks on one side.
all lean streets are school and parks. We must have sidewalk at least on the side of the street that the school and parks are on. So we have that. One problem is it always doesn't get. Now, for instance, Countryside Estates, the alderman, it's not you, the alderman from Countryside Estates came and said, well, people in the subdivision don't want sidewalks. So that's why we don't have sidewalks on the streets in Countryside Estates, which is...
Actually, that's quite common, but it was more like the developer didn't want to pay for it. There were no people in that.
Oh, it was in the development agreement. We had the money. It was all right there.
Well, after it was after the houses went in, though.
Yeah, but I mean...
So it would have been, went in, and the developer would have been forced to do it at the right time.
Well, that's what the alderman says. But the alderman ended up voting out the sidewalks out of it, and they recommended the council. The council went along, so we don't have any sidewalks in Countryside Estates.
You're saying ordinances don't really matter.
Well, you know, you got to have the elected officials back things up. We put the sidewalk in on that street that you were just talking about by the high school. Put the sidewalk in. One of the neighbors didn't like it. Council had us remove the sidewalk.
I didn't know that.
That's
oh, you mean that path, though?
Yeah. Well, the sidewalk that goes Forest Hill Avenue into the high school, we actually... It had the developer, it was all plan commission approved it, council approved it, it was in the development agreement, developer put it in, and homeowner didn't like it.
And again, now this is where I'm a marketing guy, so I talk in terms of marketing. People have this idea, which is false, that if you build through a developer or a homeowner and you build, you have the right to build what you want. That's fallacy. Don't, because unless you got your own electricity coming in, your own water, and your own street system coming in, the city is maintaining infrastructure to keep you solvent, to keep customers coming, to keep you able to come home and work. The least the city can ask in return is we need to maximize value for every square inch we have out here. If the economy is that bad, we got to maximize value. You will put a sidewalk in, because just because you have to shovel it or you think it's inconvenient, I'm sorry, but the values of the houses around you are going to go up. The businesses around you are going to have better access to the customers. I'm sure there are businesses that would love to have people walk from a football game and buy some.
And just because you didn't have a sidewalk doesn't mean people aren't going to walk there. That's the problem they're having right now.
Yeah,
people are walking there
in the dark.
Yeah, without a sidewalk, and the homeowner's saying, I'd rather have a sidewalk than have people walk through my property all the time.
Commissioner Powell.
I think this discussion leads to something, you know, if we have certain aldermen or we have certain constituents or homeowners or property owners need to be educated about the values that we're talking about. I think the economics were pretty clear. I think what I've seen in the past about how development, and I think Randy will correct me when I screw this up. I know I'm not going to say correctly on the economics, but you know, I always get messed up. But it seems like we have to be much better at getting the best value for what our land is worth in the city of Franklin, because it's paying for the bills. Fully developing everything is the Ponzi scheme, because we're trying to develop here to pay for what we already have. What we need to do is get the best value out of what we've got. And if you look at the complete streets, you look at how those, like the Bayshore development in Glendale, it has certain advantages they have over the city of Franklin, but we should think about how we can have, we don't need the massive slot of Bayshore, but we should think about smaller little Bayshores, like a 76 in Rawson, or a 27th in Rawson, or at High 100 in Loomis. Those kinds of developments could go in there where we're maximizing the amount of value we're getting for smaller plots and still not having to pay for all the infrastructure. Get people to understand the trails and connectivity isn't going to bring in robbers, rapists, and murders, which I've heard many times when trails go in. Those are the only people that seem to use trails. You laugh, but there are people that actually believe crime goes up when you put a trail in. That's the perception. It's completely false. Crime usually drops down because you have more eyes walking around in your neighborhood. So it's really an education.
Well, I think this presentation leads into your item D on your agenda, which is why the Trails Committee is here as part of this. Before I can help kind of support this idea. Tonight, everybody agreed on a motion that the Trails Committee would hold off on funding and the grant. grant formation committee until we decide what angle the trails committee is going to form. Chairman Fowler was going to have to discuss that. So I don't know how the planning commission, where we want to go with this presentation, if there's any motions or any ideas or anything that comes into it, but maybe Chairman Fowler as the joint trail could address that thought and maybe it'll tie in. I don't really think we have any other things we can see on the agenda and the graphic. So I'll come up with the next step.
Any other comments on item 3A? Is that the only item on the Trails Committee agenda?
Yes.
What's the pleasure of the Trails Committee? Do they wish to adjourn at this point?
Well,
because
this one goes with that
yeah,
one.
But this is part of the planning commission.
Okay,
yes, we can adjourn.
So
second. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say. Trails Committee is adjourned. Thank you for sharing your space.
Pleasure to have you here this evening. Welcome back at any planning commission meeting.
Thank you.
Item 3B, I'm not aware that there's anything to report. Are you as staff aware of anything to report on item 3B?
Nope.
Okay. Item 3C, is there anything to report?
In a roundabout way, we continue to work on economic development issues. And some of those are set forth as recommendations in the conference master plan. But it's more so from the standpoint of the mayor's initiative that we do more economic development or helping Ford, Franklin, those kinds of things. But examples would be we are updating some of the lists and information we have on the city website and trying to find out other types of information that would be valuable to developers. And so we're continuing to work on that.
Very good. Thank you. Item 3D, Commissioner Fowler, Commissioner, who would like to report on the Trails Committee?
Yeah, just I'm going to cover a couple of just housekeeping items for the Trails Committee, and then I want to jump into what we were discussing following John's presentation. We have that mini grant is moving forward. We're going to be putting in an application for the $1,000 mini grant, which involves flagging different intersections. And for some of the public that's in the audience today, what we're talking about is at 51st and Forest Hill, 51st and Bike Trail, 51st and Drexel, and 51st at Rawson. There's a small container with orange flags on a pole. They've been used around the country and actually other communities in the state of Wisconsin, Middleton to be one. And then a pedestrian grabs that as they cross the street, and the flag, the orange flag, gives them more visibility to the traffic as they cross. And then they put it, and there are two holders, one on either side of the intersection, and they drop the flag at the other holder when they come across. Alderman Willem, a member of our committee, was talking about some of the different kinds of containers we might use. And there was some concern, you know, snow plows might hit them, so we're going to have to work with the city of Franklin, DPW, and the positioning of these so that they're not harmed by the snow plows, that they're visible in maintenance. We think that's a really good idea. That's for about the $1,000 grant will cover all four of those intersections. That grant is due October 19th, and we're in the process of preparing that application. We're also going to be, we're in communication with the school board, because we're going to put them on the application as well. It's always beneficial to have the city and the local school district, which we're working with as part of that grant. In fact, I think it's required that we have it. So that's one of the housekeeping items I wanted to take care of. The second item is we are preparing a memorandum. John Micklick and Greg Kowalski are putting together a memorandum for my signature as the chair of the committee to go to the council at some point for approval, and the direction that we would like to see the Trails Committee go. We're thinking that we would drop the name Trails. We would become more of either a connectivity or the complete streets type of committee, or we disband completely and become part of this overarching group that John's been talking about. So we're looking for some discussion from the Planning Commission, a little guidance as we move forward with how we might construct that. And I think our committee thinks that John's ideas have merit, and we'd like to see them discussed further. And as the chair, I would like to see this be advanced. I think it has a lot of potential for it to be discussed.
I would agree with that. I would sort of regret that the mayor and the alderman are not here, because I would really like to have their participation in such a discussion. Well,
I believe this is of enough of importance, and I don't, excuse me for interrupting you, Mr. Chairman, but I believe we'll have to just do it again. Not his presentation per se, but this can wait. I think some of the minor things that the committee can continue, I shouldn't call them minor, but there are things the committee will continue to do, these mini grants, and we'll continue to pursue the Safe Routes to School, which we do have council action giving us the go-ahead to do those things. But I think for the long haul, we don't have to rush. We should move with due diligence, but I think at some point we do need to have the mayor and then actually go to the council and have his presentation. And maybe we do it all at once with the council, get on their agenda. And I think as Alderman Wilhelm pointed out, going to the public, the first couple of meetings, we may get nobody showing up, but I think we get people and start to educate them on this. And the economic value that it has, I think, is going to be critical in these times when money is not going to be raining down from the state, local, and county government. We're going to have to do this pretty much on our own.
Mr. Bell.
Yeah, I think for the budget this coming year is going to be a real test if we can get money for a trail on 51st Street North. That'll be the first time, basically, the first time that the city will have funded that, except on a reconstruction project. So that's a big step forward. And it looks like so far the council is. I mean, that's a big step forward, and then continuing to use our grant for sidewalks on 51st Street South. But it's always going to be a struggle, I think, for funding. It's just I see cities are just finances. It's going to be a good deal.
And if I could just wrap up, I believe success breeds success. I mean, one of the things I kept hearing about 51st Street is you will never get a sidewalk, you'll never get a trail on 51st Street. One, because it was too expensive. But when I asked, how expensive is the trail? No one could give me an answer because we hadn't done the math. We had some estimates, but no one had ever done the math. And I think once we get a north-south connection on 51st Street, is it perfect? Is it the connectivity we're looking for now? But it's a start. The Oak Leaf Trail was a start. I mean, people see how those trails get used. I mean, I remember there was some opposition to the Oak Leaf Trail, not just for the fact that I feel the quarry got away with not doing what they promised us on 51st Street, but there were other people opposed to that trail. But now that the trail's in, it is used on a regular basis. And I think the more trails, the more sidewalks, the more connectivity we get in, that actually connects to something like Sentinels. And I see people using Ross, and I see more people carrying groceries walking down Ross than I live. It's just that I'm looking for it now. This breeds success. And I think you will start to see some positive momentum for this. Maybe I'm wrong. I'm a glass half full kind of guy.
Are they taking the carts home with them?
Hopefully. they throw them in the creek. And then as the MMSD water course maintenance manager, I have to pull the shopping carts out of the creek's layer. That's the other issue we got to deal with. But that's something else.
Anything?
I don't have a voice left.
Thank you very much for your presentation and your expenditure of your voice. Anything else on item 3D? If not, is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Meeting is adjourned.
Go Tigers.